Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Welcome back for the last half hour of the program today. We're going to be talking about Vatican attempts to reach out to Anglicans, more than just to reach out, to make a place for disaffected Anglicans. Of course, here in the United States, we're well aware of what has been happening in the Episcopal Church USA, outright rebellion to the rest of worldwide Anglicanism, a severe departure from any confessional basis, any scriptural basis that the Anglican Church retains, and pretty much a disregard for both the warning and, in many ways, the deep, deep concern of worldwide Anglicanism. So, some cannot stay. Is Rome the answer? Is Vatican making a place? And is that the place for disaffected Anglicans? I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the Vatican attempt to reach out to Anglicans with Dr. Gerald Bray of Samford University. But first, a story about Pope Benedict's recent meeting with the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, from CBS News.
There were handshakes in public, but at a moment of increased tension between Catholic and Anglican churches, the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury spent barely 20 minutes in private conversation. Rowan Williams presides over the worldwide congregation of Anglicans, about 80 million people, including more than 2 million Episcopalians in the United States. His church is divided over issues of homosexuality and gender.
The 26th presiding bishop.
Some Anglicans object to the ordination of women and gay men as priests, and now their election as bishops. Last month, Pope Benedict offered disaffected Anglicans the opportunity to convert to Catholicism, but retained some of their own traditions, like married priests. To the Archbishop, that came out of the blue. The Vatican has been accused of poaching. Vatican officials insist the Pope is merely reaching out. Anglican priest Christopher Pearson is one of those seriously contemplating Rome's offer.
So, you know, the things that we have taught and the life we have lived and the gospel that we have proclaimed has been continually either rejected or not wanted.
The Archbishop called the Vatican's offer the elephant in the room, but he made a point in Rome of saying his church was not going to backtrack on the ordination of women. Anglican church activists like Christina Rees welcome the direction their church is taking.
Anglicanism is moving in one direction on the issue of women's ordination, and the change, I think, would have to come from the Vatican.
This Pope has made clear he will not budge on the issue of women as priests, even as he works to unify the Christian churches. Sheila McVicker, CBS News, London.
Joining us to talk about this story, Dr. Gerald Bray, research professor at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama, an ordained minister in the Church of England, and author and editor of several books, including We Believe in One God. Dr. Bray, welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much, Todd.
What would a confessional Anglican have to sacrifice to convert to Catholicism?
Well, of course, the key in that question is the word confessional. Most of the Anglicans who are being reached out to directly and who are taking up this offer or, you know, thinking seriously about it would not be confessional Anglicans in the traditional sense. They may be Orthodox Christians in the sense that they follow the creeds of the church and so on. But if you're thinking of Anglicanism in terms of its Reformation heritage, many of those people would reject that already. They wouldn't accept it. And so somebody who does accept it, the 39 Articles of Religion, for example, which are the Reformation confessional statement of Anglicanism, would have to give up the Protestant Reformation, really, and all that entails in terms of sola scriptura, you know, the supreme authority of Holy Scripture, the place of tradition in the church, justification by faith alone. Everything that we think of as traditionally Protestant doctrine.
How do you view this from the Roman Catholic side? That is, the term in the CBS News story was poaching. Others might say sheep stealing. How would you view that? I mean, would you concur with that or not?
No, I think that's unfair. I think from the Roman side, of course, they know that there are people in the Anglican Communion who are sympathetic to their theological position. There's been hesitation from the Roman Catholic Church because a lot of the people that they're reaching out to are much more conservative than they would be, almost more Roman than Rome, if you like, you know, that kind of problem. And there is a certain amount of opposition within the Roman Church to allowing Anglicans to come in for that reason, because they're afraid that it will only reinforce the conservative, ultra-conservative views, held within the Roman Church already. So I think the Pope is probably not to be blamed in that respect. I think that from his point of view, you know, he's genuinely trying to reach out to people who share his views and to accommodate them.
So what is the solution for worldwide Anglicanism? In many ways, on the outside looking into this, I mean, arguably American province that has decided to thumb its nose at not only the historic church, to disregard that, but its fellow present-day Anglicans.
Yes, I mean, this, of course, is a great embarrassment. I think the only thing the Anglican Communion can do is to cut loose to say to the Episcopal Church in the United States that we are no longer in communion with you. Now, that will be a very difficult thing to do, of course, in many ways. But the Episcopal Church has made it clear on a number of occasions that is the direction in which they're headed. They have no intention of going back on anything that they have done. At the very, very most, they might be prepared to delay the implementation of certain things for a few months or even a few years, to let other people catch up. But that's it. There's certainly no intention of reconsidering the fundamentals of their position. And of course, Anglican churches in other parts of the world are in a very different place now. This would be less true, I suppose, of the more developed world, like the Church of England, for example, Church in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and so on. But when you get to or Africa or Asia or most of Latin America, you're dealing with a very different situation, and those people are extremely annoyed, not only with what the American Church has done, but with the attempt of these people to say, you must accept us, because we're in communion with you. And, of course, the Africans turn around and say, well, you never asked us anything about this. You know, you're forcing it down our throats. So I think that the only real way forward is to say, well, we have to go our separate ways.
What percentage do we know? What percentage of the Anglican Communion rejects the ordination of women? Isn't even willing to go that far? That some people view as a slippery slope toward the ordination of homosexuals.
Yes, it's probably somewhere between a half and two thirds. It's difficult to say precisely because it's hard to know how you count and who you count. If you think in terms, for example, of bishops and dioceses and so on who, would reject the ordination of women, well, then you're taking churches like, for example, the Church of Nigeria or the Church of Uganda or something like this. You see these large churches. But, of course, within the Episcopal Church in the U.S. and certainly within the Church of England, there are important groups which are opposed to the ordination of women, and it's very hard to know just how many of these people there are, because the tendency is for people who are elected to synods and so on. These are the politicians with agendas, and they tend to be more radical in some ways than the rank and file in the parishes. So it's hard to know, but I would say somewhere between half and two thirds would be against it.
Dr. Bray, with only a minute before we take a break, do you think that this is part of the appeal for Anglicans, some Anglicans, on the Roman offer here of a place to stand, that the Roman Church refuses to ordain women and could represent in some ways a firewall against that issue for Anglicans who never want to visit the issue.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think that's a major attraction. And, of course, they see this as a tip of a much bigger iceberg. You know, it's not perhaps the most important issue, but it's a part of a package of issues, and it's the one that perhaps is most readily understood by non-theological people.
Our guest, Dr. Gerald Bray, is research professor at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. He's an ordained minister in the Church of England and author and editor of several books, including We Believe in One God. When we come back, we'll talk about the theological differences that exist between Anglicanism and the Roman Catholic Church, beginning with the big one, of course, the one upon which the Reformation really either stands or falls. Luther would have said the Church itself stands or falls on the doctrine of justification. The classical formulation, of course, is that sinners are declared righteous by God solely on account of his grace for us in Jesus Christ alone. The solas of the Reformation ring loud and strong down these centuries. In Rome, of course, since the Counter-Reformation, this formulation, this classical formulation, is explicitly rejected. One wonders, I mean, you have to wonder, how can an Anglican who would hold to the classical formulation of the doctrine of justification be able to go home to Rome when Rome is still a Tridentine church, is still a church that says that the doctrine of justification, as the Reformers stated it, is to be anathema. We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. We're talking with Dr. Gerald Bray about Vatican attempts to reach out to Anglicans on this Thursday afternoon, December the 3rd. I'm interested to find out also, Rowan Williams and Pope Benedict met together. What must have been said there? And perhaps what is Rowan Williams' mind on the fact that Rome is reaching out to some of his? We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus.
Here's what Pastor Bill Swirla had to say on a recent Issues Etc. broadcast about the new Lutheran Study Bible.
What we've had in the past is the Lutheran revision of an NIV Study Bible, so there's always a certain yes, but character to it. This is done by Lutheran theologians and exegetes, and I think it's something that we can use confidently in our Bible studies and home devotions and other places.
You can purchase the new Lutheran Study Bible online. Just look for the cover at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page and click Share This.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Vatican attempts to reach out to Anglicans. Dr. Gerald Bray is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Bray, occasionally someone from my wing of the Reformation, a Lutheran, will say, okay, I'm going back to Rome, frustrated with the state of things in Lutheranism. And of course, the first question that always comes up in my mind is, what are you going to do with the two staid positions of the Reformation on the doctrine of justification, the classical formulation that a man is declared righteous by God on account of his grace for Christ's sake alone and solely by faith? And Rome, of course, has rejected this historically from the time of the Reformation. My same question to you for those Anglicans who would hope to return to Rome.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right, of course. I mean, historically, the doctrine of justification by faith alone has been part of the Anglican formularies right from the very beginning. In fact, it's very interesting because when Henry VIII broke with Rome, he was not a fan of Martin Luther and vice versa. They didn't get along terribly well with one another. But the one thing that he took on board and stayed fundamental in the Reformation Church of England was the doctrine of justification by faith alone. You find it right from the very beginning. This would be as characteristic of traditional Anglicanism as it is of Lutheranism. And it was only really in the 19th century when John Henry Newman, the famous Cardinal Newman, wrote about justification and actually travestied Luther. I mean, he didn't understand Luther at all, travestied this and said, you know, that it was all false and all the rest of it, that you got people within the Anglican church who fell for that kind of thing who abandoned the Reformation doctrine of justification by faith. This is really what you find with the Anglo-Catholic wing of the church today, that these would be people who would not either believe that or give it a very prominent place in their thinking. So an Anglican who follows his own church's teaching would, of course, not be able to go to Rome for the very reasons that you say. And it's only those who ignore their own church's teaching or disagree with it, who would even think of such a thing.
How big an obstacle for an Anglican, a confessing Anglican would papal authority be?
Oh, very great, because, of course, that was explicitly rejected at the time, and I would say even more so today, because modern research has demonstrated that the claim of the bishops of Rome to be the successors of Peter is not founded historically. So, the historical evidence has always been very important for Anglicans, and the absence of any serious historical proof of this would weigh very heavily.
Well, Pope Benedict and Rowan Williams did meet very briefly, apparently. I'm wondering, what do you imagine Rowan Williams had to say to the Pope on this issue, if anything?
I doubt if he had got a word in very much, to be honest. My own impression is that the Pope is not impressed with Rowan Williams and basically told him what was what. And I don't think Rowan would have had much to say one way or the other, would be my impression. Rowan Williams, of course, comes from the Catholic wing of the Church of England, but he's also a liberal. And Pope Benedict would have no time for that. So I don't think there was much of a dialogue.
Do we have any idea what Rowan Williams thinks about the Vatican's attempt to make a place for disaffected Anglicans?
I think he's an academic, of course, in many ways, and so probably he thinks many different things at the same time. In one way, he's probably thinking, well, there are Anglicans who think this way, and it's their right to think that way, and if the Pope is prepared to, make room for them, well, so be it, from a sort of academic, intellectual standpoint. But, of course, he's also the leader of the church, and he can't really look favorably on the thought that a substantial proportion of his own church membership, would leave and go over to Rome in that way. So I suppose the pragmatic side and the intellectual side would be in competition, really, in this way. I don't think, he would be intolerant of this as a person, but clearly not sympathetic as a church leader and politician.
What do you make of the formation of a new Anglican province in the U.S.?
I think this is very encouraging because For many years, of course, there's been a kind of gradual drift away from the Episcopal Church, people breaking off. And the difficulty for other Anglicans when this happens is that these people appear to us, to outsiders, to be disgruntled. They know what they don't like, but can they get together and agree on anything positive? And the creation of an Anglican a new Anglican province in North America is a very welcome sign, because it shows that they're hammering out some kind of positive platform, which can be a viable church. Now, will this work? How will it pan out in the long run? Well, we have to wait and see. But the fact that it's being seriously undertaken, I think, is a very positive sign.
Do we know whether or not this new Anglican province in the U.S. will allow for the ordination of women?
That, I think, is one of the issues they've got to work through. There will certainly be people in the Anglican province, in this new Anglican province, who would favor the ordination of women. There would also be those who are against it. And I think that's one of the things that, is up in the air. And, of course, it's got to be sorted out one way or the other, because if it isn't, there'll just be another split. In fact, there probably will be another split, whatever they decide. But they need to make up their minds and take a firm line.
How many would you expect? This is obviously impossible to tell for sure, but how many would you expect will take up Pope Benedict XVI's offer to find a place there in the Roman Church?
I think in the United States, only a very small number would do this, mainly because the Episcopal Church has been falling apart for such a long time that most of those who would be wanting to go that direction have already gone, and so I don't think there'd be that many in numbers. In other Anglican churches, it really depends, what part of the world you're in. In the third world, I don't think there'd be very many either, but that's because liberalism is less of a problem. I think the only places where there will be substantial numbers of Anglicans who would take up this offer would be in England and probably in Australia, where apparently there's quite a large number of people already moving in that direction. But overall percentages, you're probably not talking about more than 5% at the most.
Where do you think the Episcopal Church USA will be in 5 to 10 years? About a minute.
Oh, even further out in left field than it already is, and probably considerably smaller as well.
Finally, then, as an Anglican, why aren't you willing to take up Pope Benedict's offer and go to Rome?
Well, I'm a confessing Anglican. I support the Reformation. In this respect, I'd much rather be a Lutheran than be a Roman Catholic. And, that would be my way of thinking. So it holds no attraction to me whatsoever.
Dr. Gerald Bray is research professor at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama, an ordained minister in the Church of England, author and editor of several books, including We Believe in One God. Dr. Bray, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you.
It is a mess, isn't it? And we dare not, as many would try to, inside and outside the Reformation, lay the mess at the feet of the reformers of the Reformation. That's where things were set right again. But at least the battle lines, theological battle lines, are drawn clearly enough. We know where Rome stands on the central teaching of Scripture. They reject salvation by grace through faith for Christ's sake alone. They clearly reject that. Not every Catholic to a person, but the Church itself still holds to those condemnations of the Council of Trent after the Reformation. We know where the English Reformation ought to stand on that same issue. So we know quite clearly what must be left behind if someone is to re-enter the Roman Church, be they a Lutheran or an Anglican or anything else that claims to be in the theological lineage of the Christian Reformation. We know what must be left behind. Whatever other reasons there may be for going home to Rome, some people say, whatever other reasons there may be, and whatever reasons may not be, whether one is willing to admit it or not, if someone is willing to be embraced again by the Pope and his teaching and his church, you will have to leave the doctrine of justification at the door. There are Anglicans who will be willing to do this, small number. There are Lutherans who are willing to do this. But just bear in mind what it is you are sacrificing, what it is you must sacrifice if you embrace the teaching of the Roman Church as it stands today. A better solution is for the Roman Church to embrace the teaching of Holy Scripture and the confession of the Church Historic and drop its condemnation of justification by grace through faith for Christ's sake alone. More than that, to embrace it. And then we might be able to talk about, in time, being at home with one another, all of us. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc. Talk with you again tomorrow.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.